Boom. What's up? It's another episode of Life in Jiu-Jitsu. I'm here with Manny Rocha, Strive Jiu-Jitsu Academy in Lodi.
Yes, sir.
We met through David Mitchell.
Yes.
Yeah, he was
crazy out
there.
Crazy train.
David, if you're out there, we're wondering about you. How you doing, man? Have you heard from him?
I haven't. No, I see him make some posts every once in a
while. He'll like post like a tomato or something. He's like doing the growing the organic stuff. And then I think he moved home for a while. Dave Mitchell, man, I love him, man. He's fucking one of the most intense dudes I've ever met on the mat. And every once in a while, he'll just kind of go off the grid for a little while and then kind of pop back up.
Sure.
Like more savage than he was before.
Yeah. Yeah. He's an awesome guy, man. I like Dave.
Yeah. So he was out there training with you and Yepi back when you were at your old academy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he was like, hey, why don't you come down here? There's some pretty good rounds down here.
Yeah.
And that's when I got the idea of like, hey, you know, cause I was trying to get like my wife to come down with me. It's like, hey, why don't you, you know, come down with me. You don't have to train. Cause at the time she wasn't training yet.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just kind of hang out, we'll go wine tasting afterwards.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. And so that's where I got the idea. It's like, hey, you know, go down to Lodi, get some rounds in and then get some wine tasting in afterwards. Yep. And she actually really liked that. So when you sent me that message, it was like, hey, why don't you come down and train again? I was like, yes, I want to. I've been busy, but let me bring some of my guys down and then maybe we'll all go wine tasting afterwards or something.
Yeah, like that. It's good training, man. It's good rounds. So you guys should definitely make it down if you can.
Yeah. You guys had that old academy on like Cherokee Street?
It was right off of Cherokee. Yeah. It was called East Oak Street. It was kind of hidden away in a little place in an industrial area. So we were fairly hard to find, you know.
Yeah. Was that an issue? Since we were talking about both of us being gym owners.
Yeah. So, I think it was fine. It was a good space. It worked out really well at the time. And then there was an opportunity to, you know, go to a much more mainstream area.
Mm-hmm.
Once we did that, it changed a lot of things for us.
Shit. Really?
Yeah.
You really like from a business perspective, you really saw a big bump.
Yeah, huge. Yeah, I mean, wow. To this day, I mean, it's, you know, we get, you know, a handful of inquiries every week, you know.
And folks just walking in.
Just walking in, yeah. Because wow. There's other businesses down there. There's like a gymnastics place downstairs, which focuses on kids and stuff. It's like there's a nutrition place downstairs. There's a few other places, you know, that kind of go right into it hand in hand, you know.
Yeah. So do you feel like with that sort of like more, those more mainstream folks kind of being around it and kind of walking in, do you have more? I'm just interested in this as a gym owner. And
sure.
I think people are interested in it generally. Do you feel like it's like those people might come in and do it for 3 months and then bounce or?
Yeah. I mean, I think.
Like you might get more month to month revenue, but you might not get as many people. Like how many people see it? Try it and are like, oh fuck, this is a new lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, it breaks down to two categories, like a children's category and adults, right? Adults, the longevity of an adult training jiu-jitsu is usually slim, you know, usually
3 to 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. You don't usually get people that stay for that long of a time, especially if they just did it all spur of the moment type thing. Like, oh, mm-hmm. Hey, there's a jiu-jitsu place there. Let's go check it out. And then, you know, they're excited and they sign up and that's always great. But I think just in general, the kids usually have more
longevity
in jiu-jitsu. You know, obviously, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do too, but the parents don't give them a choice, right? They just bring them and they drop them off. And then the kids end up enjoying it. And then they make friends and it makes it
like, hey, a little bit easier. You're going to jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not.
Exactly. So I think for adults, obviously the goal is to have a program that is designed to keep as many people as possible interested and wanting to train, you know, giving them the right environment that they want to be at, you know, that they want to come to train every day or at least a few times a week. In comparison, adults just tend to fall off, right? They have other things in life that they have to be concerned with. And
it's crazy. Like the amount of things that you can lose an adult to, I lost an adult because he fell off a ladder or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they prescribed him pain pills and it just like took him down a bad path.
Yeah. That's, you know, that sucks.
other one's like, oh, my custody arrangement changed with my kids. I'm the nights I was supposed to be training, I take my kid now. So, see, yeah. You know, or like, oh, like I got a new job and now I'm
in, that's a common one.
Like I'm in another part of town and I can't come train. You know what I mean? So it seems like the balance required for adults to come train is like really, really delicate.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And it's like, the thing is like, we want to try to offer as many class times as possible too, to try to, cause you're trying to minimize those windows of, I guess you could say opportunity that would allow them to not train, you know? So it's like, if you give them more time slots, then I guess you give them more chance to be able to come train if their schedule changes or something. That's part of the reason we want to try to introduce a early morning class at some point.
Like 6 a.m.?
Yeah, because I think I see some other places that seem
to work. I'm doing those right now, and it's rough.
Man. It's hard, right?
It's rough. Yeah.
A program like that, I mean, just a noon class is difficult to kind of build up and get going. But a 6 a.m. class, I imagine, would be equally as difficult, if not more.
You know, the thing about this, so for me, I have the 6 a.m. class, I feel, is almost like it's almost like another business.
Yeah.
You know, because I have Luke, Jesse. I have like four guys that come in just for 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then four other guys that will like do one 6 a.m. class a week to kind of supplement.
Yeah.
But of my 6 a.m. guys, man, let me tell you, there's like no drama, no bullshit. Like if you're committed to training so much that you're like in the gym at 6 a.m., that means you got up at 5.
Yeah.
Or 4:30. You probably are not a knucklehead. You know,
yeah,
those guys always pay their bills on time. They're professionals, you know. Yeah, like it's really like there's a lot of knuckleheads coming through the door in the evening, or a lot more possibility of knuckleheads.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, yep. Like the knuckleheads aren't up at 6 a.m. So
yeah,
my 6 a.m. crew is like, dude, you guys are fucking respect.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You know, but it is kind of tough when it's like, I got to get up at 5, you know, and I'm not a morning guy.
Yeah.
Are you a morning guy?
I am not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, exactly.
Would you do it yourself or?
I think,
to start with it.
Yeah. I would, to start with, I would definitely do it to myself. Anytime we're introducing a program, I like to, be the one that kind of kickstarts it, mm-hmm. and gets it going, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think, although I'm not a morning person, it's something I can be, that I am excited about, and I could be excited about if we, you know, obviously can get a group together. You know, yeah, it's like we have to get a group, and it's like that with a lot of our programs, you know, introducing different programs for the kids also. And it's like I tell parents, we'd be more than happy to add this time slot, but we need a group of people to acknowledge this time slot, like saying we're going to come to this time slot.
Yeah.
10 or 12, 15, however many people.
Well, yeah, because then if someone comes to check it out and there's no one there.
Exactly.
It's not a vibrant
project. Yeah. And right? For example, if you're doing a 6 a.m. class, you're not getting up at 4:30 or 5 and getting to the gym and no one shows up that day.
Yeah.
Like that's a rough start to the day.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, tell me about it. I'm feeling it right now. You know, actually I haven't had anybody not show up on the 6 a.m. I have one dude, Kelvin, this is my shout out to you, but he was like my first guy showing up at 6 a.m. and he and I would just like drill for an hour.
Yeah.
And he got like way better, like really quick. So he was just drilling with me for like an
hour.
You know what I mean? But yeah, no, it's tough. I think so right now I offer Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
For 6 a.m.?
No, just evenings.
Okay.
Yeah. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 6:30 to 8. And then Tuesdays and Thursdays, 6 a.m. And 6:30 p.m. in the evenings. And then Saturdays at 11. So it's really just a four-day-a-week offering because I'm subleasing out of this other dojo.
Sure.
And for that reason, we charge $75 a month because we just offer less, you know?
Yeah.
So the idea is kind of like, hey, we sublease and we pass the savings on to you, you know?
Yeah.
But originally it was Tuesdays and Thursdays. And when we added that Wednesday class, everyone had signed up and they were like, oh, well, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays are my day. Tuesday, that's good. Tuesdays and Thursdays. Yeah. When I added Wednesday, I was like, all right, come on, guys. This is a big opportunity for you all. Like,
yeah.
It's a third day. This is really going to make a difference. And it was like crickets in that Wednesday class, like for months, you know?
Yeah.
Until I kind of really started terrorizing my guys. I was like, well, you guys don't want to come spend time with me?
I'm just
like, but, you know, that is to say, you know, folks who were like, well, why don't you get the Monday slot, which is probably available, or get the Friday slot? And I was like, well, because I don't want to open those slots up, just like you said, and there's no one there. So if someone does come to check it out,
Exactly.
It's not vibrant, you know? Yeah. So let me get these like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday slots like bursting at the seams. And then we'll say, okay, we'll overflow into Friday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That way people come check it out. It's like exciting. It's fun. There's like people, there's energy in the room, you know?
Yeah. And there's a mixture, right? Cause it's like, you want to do what the members are asking for and you want to give them what they want, you know, of course, like that's what we're here for. But on the flip side, it's, you know, I tell my students this a lot. It's like, we can introduce another class, but again, there has to be interest. I can't just start a class this day and, you know, people tell me, well, you should do kickboxing this
and
day too.
People say that in passing too.
Yeah. And then they say it and then it's like, okay, you start it. And then that person that asked you about it doesn't come to class. And it's like,
come on.
Yeah. What did we do? You know, why are we doing this? You know, and I've done that a couple of times. So now I'm just at the point where I've just, like I said, developed that thought process of, we need to establish a group that is interested. Like, you guys sign up, here's a sign up sheet.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
These people, you guys want this class? Okay, so I'll start the class and I expect to see you guys in the class.
Yeah.
You know, because otherwise it just...
I'm ambivalent about that, honestly. I feel like my host school, Dragonfire, and no disrespect to them, but I just feel like one of the things that I'm seeing with them is that they change their schedule around too much.
Yeah.
And...
I think that's a result of trying to find the answer, right? That's a result of trying to find what works.
Yeah. It's just, but
it's
like
a difficult thing to do.
For me, I just think about my experience in jiu-jitsu. Like, I'm a Dustin Akbari guy, right? Mm-hmm. He's my sensei.
Yeah.
Dustin's class has always been Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. It's like, hey, we're going at 6. Come join the fun. Come change your life. 6 o'clock every day. Can't make it today, make it tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, you know, if you can, Monday, Wednesday, Thursdays, these days, Tuesdays and Fridays, no, we're going every day at 6.
Yeah.
No change.
Yeah.
Just you come in for more of the same, you know, and so that became a very easy rhythm for me to get accustomed to. And it's also just really easy messaging. It's like, hey, every day at 6, come change your life, you know?
Sure.
That consistency, I think is valuable. So I think one of the things that I'm seeing with my host school is they're like playing around with they have like a vibrant kickboxing product. They have like they're a traditional martial arts school, but they can really bang, dude. They got some like young instructors, that have mixed like traditional martial arts with like some boxing and kickboxing.
Nice.
And man, they got this one kid, Forrest, and this fucking dude can bang. So he's offering kickboxing. And it's a good product. He's a good instructor. They've got a good space. It's right in ESAC, but I, you know, like you said, they're trying to find that answer. It's like, well, maybe if we move it to 2, maybe if we move it up to 5, you know, and then, you know, I'm not really vested in their business. So it's not for me to like really say, but I kind of just wondered in the back of my mind. And it's interesting for me to watch because I feel like I'm kind of learning. It's like, well, gosh, every time you guys change it, aren't you kind of losing some of the people who could make it at 2 and now can't make it at 5? You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, it's so tricky, I guess is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't realize you guys offered kickboxing.
Yeah, just two nights a week after no-gi.
Okay.
So, yeah, Tuesday and Thursday nights are no-gi.
The guys who are more interested in the combative type of stuff? Or
yeah, just some people just like to do kickboxing as a workout. It's nothing serious, you know? It's not like a fighter's class or anything like that. It's just for entry-level people who want to learn some basic striking and get a good workout, you know?
It's not anything
super advanced or anything like that, you know? Yeah, it's just a fun class, do some fun
jiu-jitsu
drills.
And fitness.
Yeah, exactly. You know, again, it was something that we added in. We used to do at the old location and people really enjoyed it. We moved to the new location. We started growing so rapidly that it was, you know,
you kind of had to add more to.
Yeah. First of all, the jiu-jitsu is our primary focus. You know, it always has been. But my point is when we moved to the new location, it's like we didn't have time to add the kickboxing back in because the jiu-jitsu started growing so much. You know, so because at some point when we moved, I was like, okay, we'll add kickboxing back in at some point. But then it just, you know, we just started getting super busy and I didn't really see the need for it. In the old place, all the people who were doing kickboxing, 99% of them were doing it as in addition to jiu-jitsu. They signed up for jiu-jitsu and trained jiu-jitsu. They would just stay for kickboxing sometimes to get a little bit extra work in.
Dude,
you know,
fucking, it's crazy how much like demand there is out there in the ether for jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Like, as I ask all my folks that come in, like, hey, what brought you in? You know? And they're just like, well, I wanted to do jiu-jitsu generally. And I just Googled places that were near my house and it turns out it's you.
Yeah.
You know, no thought about like who the more accomplished sensei is. About like, it's just like, I was looking for jiu-jitsu and you're really close. So here I am.
Yep.
You know, but that was like everybody, like, everybody who didn't come into the podcast was just looking for it, Googled it, found you, here I am. Or I feel like that's not the same with like kickboxing or, you know, others. Definitely not the same with like wrestling or any of these other martial arts. Like there's like a fucking Gracies, man. They've done a good thing. Like they've really, they've really helped to create that need in the environment for jujitsu. I don't know. Are you finding kind of the same thing with your,
with
like when people walk in the door, they're just like, hey, I just Google.
Yeah. Well, a lot, the good thing with us is that, yes, we get that a lot where people are just like, oh, I was looking for, you know, martial arts and self-defense and stuff. So I Googled something and then you guys came up, you know, so I came and check you guys out. We owe a lot of that to having like a strong online presence, you know, like on, having high Google reviews and, you know, have someone that helps a lot with that, which helps bring a ton of people in the door, you know? But a lot of times people are coming in specifically for their kids, you know, they'll bring their kids in and then they'll be watching for so long and then they'll be interested in trying it.
Do you put the kids and the parents on the mat at the same time?
No, not usually.
I see, you know, at Ultimate Fitness, I see them do that sometimes. Like if the parents have like a couple stripes on their white belt, they can like hop on the mat with their kid. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah. So our kids' class is usually.
I see the videos that you post. They're like packed to like the gills.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're still growing. It's crazy.
Really?
It's crazy.
You might have to get a bigger space.
Yeah. Yeah. We're working on that.
Right. Are you really?
Yeah.
You're trying to like get one of the adjacent spaces or?
Yeah. A few doors down from where we're at. So really? It's much bigger, like double in size.
Got it.
Mat space probably be like closer to 3,000 square feet of mat space.
Oh, so like real big.
Yeah. So we're excited.
I'm looking at a 3,000 square foot warehouse right now.
Nice.
And to imagine that all being mat space is crazy.
Yeah. I'm super excited about it. But yeah, so the kids' class is growing like crazy. So we'll have like, we have a couple of parents who their kids come into the jiu-jitsu class. They've been training there for a while, but the parents also train with us, but they train out separately, obviously in the adult class. But they've asked like, hey, would it be okay if I come onto the mat and help, you know?
Yeah.
I'm kind of, you know, I'm particular about that, about who helps because I take the classes very seriously, you know, even though it's a kid's class and we take it very serious. Like,
no, but kids learn habits though. You know, if you teach a kid a fucked up habit,
yeah, exactly. So the two or three parents that are on the mat when they decide to come and help, they're very good people. You know, they come from great families and they have great families of their own. Yeah. You know, and they don't focus just on their children. You know, most of the time they kind of hover away from their kids. You know, let the other coaches coach their kids, and so it works out really well. You know,
yeah,
it works out really well, and it's, to be honest, it's awesome. I feel super lucky that we have such great people at the academy, because it's like, you know, if it was just me by myself and running, I mean, average class is like 30 kids, 35 kids in one class. So me by myself trying to run a class of 30 kids or 35 could be rough.
That's,
you know,
that's really rough. Hey, let me ask you, how do you deal with, I want to talk about your journey too, but I'm just interested in this stuff. So how do you deal with like misbehaving kids?
It depends on what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I think, to be honest, it sounds, I don't know how it's going to sound, but for the most part, I just really, at the beginning of class when we line up, I just really am very clear about what I expect for the class that day.
Yeah.
The behavior I expect and the results that come from the behavior. It's like, you guys do great, then great things are going to happen.
Got it.
You guys have more fun. These are conversations we have before every class, before we start. Because then it kind of sets like a precedent, right? Sets up, this is what needs to happen.
Yeah.
You know, this is how it's going to go. You know,
yeah.
If this is not the way it goes, then you're going to have to sit out of class because everyone else came to train. Everyone else came to learn jiu-jitsu. This is not daycare. This is not, you know, and I'm very big on that because I think it's too easy sometimes for people to say, oh, just leave my kid. Oh, okay. And then just go do whatever, you know, but I explain to the kids, even though they're young, like, you guys are here to learn jiu-jitsu first. That's why you're here. We're going to have fun and that's all great, but you're here to learn jiu-jitsu. You know, it's not a playground. It's not. We do great during class. You do great during the drills. Really apply yourselves, work hard. And then maybe we'll have time for a game or something at the end, play tug of war or zombies or some live matches, you know, kids love to do live matches. So it's that type of thing. So we really just try to, at the beginning of class, I'll spend 5 minutes or something just talking to them and getting us all on the same page.
Got it.
You know, I mean, even we
have spend like 5 minutes talking to them.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So at the beginning of every class,
so you know, they're
all lined up. Yeah. And it's just, we just have a simple conversation.
Yeah.
Saying after I say whatever I feel like I had to say, I just ask if they have any question. Anybody have any questions? No. Okay. So we bowed in and tell everybody, all right, you got 10 seconds to find a partner. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Bam. And so you got 5-year-old kids, you know, clapping all at the same time, you know. I think it's just a matter of taking the extra time to really establish a connection with them instead of just telling them what to do. Like, hey, go do this. Cause kids are like, whatever. You know, they don't really care. I feel like when giving them the opportunity to show you that they want to be there, if you give them the chance to show you like, hey, I can do this and I really want to do really well at this. I found that when I give them that opportunity, then they always do really well.
One sensei to 35 kids sounds exhausting.
Rough. Yeah. That's what I said. I'm lucky that I have like, Meredith and Armando, who's another one of my blue belts. I have Dave Rabara, who helps a lot, and John Kasem. And I mean, those guys, they help me on a daily basis, you know, and it's huge. It's great because it allows me because we all do the warm-ups together. All the kids do the warm-ups together. And after the warm-ups are done, we come back on the mat and I'll separate the groups.
Oh, wow.
And the more advanced and, you know, older kids.
Like yellow ones, green belts.
Exactly. Yeah. The highest we have right now is only solid gray.
Got it.
But we'll separate the groups and then, okay. And the coaches and I will have a discussion. Like, this is what I want us to cover today. You know, I'll write it like on the whiteboard. So we'll do a double A takedown to the close guard, posture, break the guard, knee cut, pass the side control, whatever the sequence is for that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever the sequence is. And then we'll all drill it together a little bit, all the coaches, to make sure we got it down. All right. You guys good? Okay.
And do you teach the little kids chokes? I had like 2 8-year-olds like trying to do triangle chokes. And I was like, oh,
yeah, the triangle choke, I don't mind. You know, triangle choke,
there's an arm in there, right?
So it's it's like some of the more advanced kids. I had a couple of younger kids, but they've been grappling for, you know, a little bit over a year, and you know, they understand how to move pretty good already, you know. And they're natural competitors. They're just like, oh, you know.
I see some of those kids you have, and they're like that blonde kid with the mohawk.
Yeah, little guy.
Yeah, little kid with the mohawk. Soren. He looks like he's just like
he's a like monster,
universal soldier.
Yeah, he's a beast. He's got his partner. It's great because for a long time Soren didn't have someone that he could drill with.
Like on his level or something.
Yeah, like his body weight and stuff, and had that same type of drive. But then we had a young kid who his name is Isaac. He joined the academy, and I mean, they call each other their jiu-jitsu brothers, you know, and they're just like little guys, you know, but it's awesome to see. And when they see each other, they like run over and hug each other and they just get to work. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, how good are they going to be when they're like 12?
Exactly. It's awesome.
That's freaking cool.
It's awesome.
So so triangle choke maybe, but maybe.
Oh, not like, yeah. So the triangle choke, I don't mind. I mean, a lot of the younger kids don't really
have
the understanding to apply it anyway.
Yeah.
Like the real small ones. But the kids that are a little older, I don't mind them doing triangle choke.
You mean like 10, 11, 12?
Yeah. I'm even like 8, 9 years old. Like, I don't mind them doing it if they can do it, because I feel like we have a clear message to the kids of when it's time to tap. Right.
Yeah.
Like before your arm goes straight, you tap, right? If you lose control of your hand, like
that's time.
Partner, to tap. It's time to tap. Don't sit there fighting it. And I tell the kids, I'm very realistic with the guy. I tell them jiu-jitsu works. This is not magical martial arts. You know what I mean? If you don't tap, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and this is important in my eyes for them to understand, because if they ever have a situation where they're trying to defend themselves and they're thinking about like, oh, I'm just going to get this kid in the armbar, and they're not thinking about that it could actually hurt the kid, and they just start hipping into some random kid's arm, they're going to hurt them.
I
think it's important that we establish that in the academy, you know.
I like that. I like that idea of like really just talking to them for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah. To be honest, it's like, it's changed everything. It's changed our entire program. It's very humbling, and it's just gives you a different perspective on things, because we think of like, okay, yeah, they're kids and that's great and they absorb information really well, but a lot of times you sit down with these kids and you just explain it to them, you know, like if they're goofing around, say, okay, you know, everybody quiet down, and you talk to them and say, we're getting off course, like we need to stay focused on what we're doing.
Yeah,
these are the drills we need to do. We need to get these drills done. This is what needs to happen today. This is why we're here, right?
Do the parents usually like, man, I'm so interested, because I just see you doing such a good job, and I'm kind of
thank you. I appreciate that.
Bro. No, I mean, I see it on Facebook. I'm like, fuck, dude, this guy's killing it. So I'm interested in this, and I want to talk about your journey too. But do the parents like drop them off, or do they stay and watch?
So
do you have a preference?
I don't have a preference. I mean, honestly, I like when the parents stay and when they watch. The thing is with our academy, the way it's structured right now, that's an enclosed
room. You guys have that room. Yeah.
It's an enclosed room. So the parents have to watch from like the window or the hallway doors.
Their head in.
Yeah, which is a bummer, which is why we're excited about the new space also.
But, is that for sure happening? Or?
It's really close, man. Allegedly. I've been working on it for a while. But everything looks really good. So
If it does happen, you got to make sure to tell me so I can announce it on
the podcast. Yes. Yeah, of course. I definitely will. But yeah, so I like when the parents stay and watch. And, you know, we have amazing parents. We don't have any issues with people yelling onto the mat or any of that. You know, no like, hey, oh, do this. We don't have any of that, thankfully. Oh, that's cool. You know, all the parents are wonderful. And all the parents, you know, have great things to say about all of our coaches that help and stuff, you know, which is it's a wonderful thing. But yeah, I like when the parents stay because it's nice. I think
if there's an issue with the kid, you can be like, hey, come.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's sometimes we'll have parents who just drop off their kids, which I understand. Sometimes, you know, you drop off, you got something to do real fast, you know, rent a store, whatever's got to get done. That's perfectly fine. I have no issue with that, you know. But I don't know. I have no preference, but I like when the parents stay and watch the kids because I feel like it gives the kids a
motivation or something.
Yeah. You know, motivation, but also like a sense of accomplishment. You know, they do something really well, and one of the coaches will tell them, like, man, you did a great job. It was awesome, you know, and they give them like high five, and they're like, yeah, and they get all excited, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the kids feel that, you know, they feel that their parent is there and they can go back to them and they can be like, yeah, you're doing awesome, you know, and it makes them feel good about it. You know?
Hey, so how'd you get started in martial arts?
I got started, I was overweight. I was like almost 15 years old, and I was probably like 280, 270, something like that. And I just always liked martial arts like any other kid, right? Dude, like everybody else says. Yeah, I used to watch a lot of Bruce Lee movies.
It was like the Bruce Lee era you grew up in.
Yeah, you know, and I was like huge into that. You know, I was the kid that dressed up as a ninja for Halloween and all that. You know what I mean? I just loved martial arts from a young age.
Yeah.
And then first chance I got, my mom signed me up for Taekwondo. And I started training at Moon Central Valley Taekwondo. They're not even around anymore. But that's where I kind of started officially training martial arts, you know. I did Taekwondo for a long time, competed Olympic style Taekwondo. And
oh, cool.
Yeah. I got a buddy, TJ Curry. He's like, this guy's like a Olympic level, you know.
You know, a lot of people write off those traditional martial arts, but if you really apply it and compete,
yeah,
you can fuck someone up with Taekwondo. Yeah. It's cool Taekwondo.
And people ask me, the funny thing is, so there was a point where I got really in deep into MMA and I wanted to focus on fighting MMA, and I moved to Albuquerque and all that stuff. And I got a lot of compliments on my movement, distance management, hard to hit, countering really well, stuff like this. Right.
Yeah.
And I tell everybody, I credit that 100% to Taekwondo, because Taekwondo is about it's about points and keeping a certain distance between you and your partner, just outside of range for them, but just inside of range for you. And when you train that for so many years, I hold like a second degree black belt in Taekwondo now. So you train that for so many years, you start to that. Like, I haven't done any striking in a long time, obviously, because I blew my knee out and there was all kinds of stuff going on. I just haven't done any striking forever.
Yeah.
But that distance still management with you. Is still there. Yeah. It's like natural. Even if I'm holding pads for people, like I have clients that I hold pads for and stuff, and I move around with them sometimes. And that's, it's just this, it's just a different understanding, in my opinion, of distance control, right? And that's everything when it comes to striking, right? That's not everything, but that's huge when it comes to striking, right? You can just stand with somebody and just bang it out, and that's fine too. That's great, you know?
I don't recommend that.
Yeah, it's not a good idea.
Don't do that, guys. Yeah.
People think it's fun until you actually do it, you know? Yeah. And then you have the distance management when you're like evading and cutting angles and being able to counter without taking the damage. You know, with understanding and having strong distance management, your damage that you take goes down by like 70%.
Yeah, you know?
And
the guys with good footwork are the ones that,
exactly.
You know, like last.
Yes.
You know, I mean, like you look at like Dominic Cruz, he gets all these injuries that are like non-head trauma related.
Yeah.
But like, you know, he's going to be speaking coherently into his 70s and 80s. You know, he's because he's got that evasive footwork, and he's not just sitting there to bang it out, you know. Where
exactly?
I see some of these other guys, I'm just like, holy shit, man! Like, that isn't going to pay off for you.
Yeah, you talk about, like, you know? I mean, think about a guy like Floyd Mayweather too. You know, same thing. Guy with so many fights, and you hear him talk, is like, he's never had a fight.
He's leaving the sport unscathed.
Yeah,
like totally unscathed. You know.
Yeah, and the people, like, there's a lot of, you know, obviously this is ongoing. People have different opinions about him, but the reality is, this man he's fought all the best people in the world and has taken the minimal amount of damage. Yeah, and beat them all convincingly. You know, the name of the game is don't get hit and hit the person back.
Yeah,
that's the name of the game.
We had this. We had this boxing coach at the arena, Lucky, and he was always like, make him miss, make him pay.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he passed, unfortunately. But they wrote, like, it was really, they wrote that up on the ceiling for him. Like, and they painted the wall black, and then in white, they wrote that, you know, make him miss, make him pay.
Yeah, that's cool.
But dude, that guy was like a South African, like, boxing champion, and there'd only be like 3 guys in his class sometimes. So I had to, like, jump in and, like, absorb as much as I can, because that, like, that's, he's really like, he really taught me how to box, you know?
Yeah.
But it was the same thing, just like distance management. And as you say, like, with, like, Floyd, there's a picture of him, like, getting touched on the nose with the glove, but the fist, like, the actual knuckles didn't connect, and he's got his eyes open.
Yeah.
Know? He's like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, he touched me, but he didn't get me. And he comes right back and dings him, you know? That's really impressive. Like, that really is impressive. You say it's maybe not everything. It's close to everything.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very close to everything. And I feel, you know, when we talk about distance, I feel like that really matters in jiu-jitsu in some ways too. It's not as fine. Like, there's no finer distance management than what's needed for boxing and taekwondo, you know. But as a concept, I find it really useful. Like, when I tell my guys, like, passing guard, there's like 3 distances that you should think about and 3 distances that you should have options for. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're passing guard, you're standing over the person, you're disengaged from them. And are you going to try and, like, parry, like, matador, something way outside, something like way outside, bullfighter pass, but like, you're not really entangled with them. You know what I mean? So you got something from that outside distance, or you're going to, like, jump right to mount, you know, something from way outside. And then maybe you're, like, in a low half guard, and you're just trying to get that knee out, and you're like kind of that middle distance, or a butterfly, something in that middle, like, you guys are entangled, but not that much.
Yeah.
And then you got to have a smash pass when you're just, like, getting on top of him, smushing his head down, cutting that knee across his hip, turning his hips, turning his head the other way. And now, okay, like, you got one out, and you got one middle, and you got one all the way entangled. Right. And so you think about those 3 distances, you know. I use that tool with, like, when I train my guys, like, with, like, sweeps. Like, if someone's all the way on top of you, like, if they're kind of, like, really, really trying to pin you down for whatever reason, maybe it's MMA or something, or if they're kind of postured up in a middle posture, or if, like, the guard is open, you got to, like, come up to them, you know, like, they're kind of sitting back, you got to kind of come up to them. So I feel like that distance management tool is, like, really a useful concept for a lot of jiu-jitsu, which is, you know, I think sometimes not talked about.
Yeah, it's funny. It's something that I talk about.
Really?
I explain it fairly similar to that.
No shit.
Like, the 3 different distances. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's important. It's important to understand. It's like, people look at guard passing, I think, especially newer,
like,
people,
it's just one big thing.
Yeah. It's not.
Yeah. Because, I mean, those are different fights.
Yes.
Like, if you're doing a matador pass,
much different.
Or if you're, like, Davin Maxwell taught this to me, and I don't know what it's called, but basically you do, like, ankle to ankle contact in a butterfly, and then they push back against your ankle because you got that point of contact, and you just kind of step your other leg up and over.
Yeah,
I forget what that's called, but that's totally from the outside, and there's, like, no entanglement. You know what I mean? That's so different than just, like, sitting down to an S guard or something like that, or, like, sitting down to, like, smashing, like, a deep half guard smash or something like that. You know, and so I worry that a lot of times people think about this stuff as kind of, like, the same thing. You know.
Yeah.
Who'd you get your black? You got your black belt from Fabio.
Yeah, I got my black belt from a guy named Phil Torres.
Got it.
And Fabio Prado.
Okay.
Phil Torres, the old school Cesar Gracie guy.
Okay. Oh, yeah. You're a Cesar Gracie guy.
Originally.
Got it.
Started, because what happened was, I never learned directly from Cesar. When I started training jiu-jitsu, I started training on Flora Street in Stockton. When, you know, before Nate was a big deal. Yeah. You know, he was just a younger guy, like most of us, you know, and Nick was the man, and we were all trying to, you know, earn our right to like get rounds in with Nick. And, you know, that's when everybody was still training together.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Lucas Gamaza and Randy Spence and all the, it was all one under one roof. I was just one of the younger guys coming up, you know?
Yeah. Cause you guys are all about the same age.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it all started there, and that gym was Phil's gym, Phil Torres's gym.
Okay.
On Flora Street. So that's where it all kind of started. And Fabio was there. Fabio was always part of the picture, and he was there all the way from when I got my blue belt, you know. And then Phil stopped teaching. He wanted to kind of get out of teaching jiu-jitsu for a while. I think he had just kind of got burnt out, been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Fabio had been a friend of mine for a long time, and always kind of been there for me in the jiu-jitsu community, you know. So to me, when it came time to represent a team, it kind of made sense to me.
Fabio.
Yeah. To represent Fabio.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so to this day, Fabio's like, I mean, anytime I ever needed anything, or if I needed training for an event, anything, he would just like, yeah, come on, bro, come over here and we'll train.
That's cool.
He would come to my academy whenever, you know, he's always been there. So,
you know, I've never gotten a roll in with that guy.
He's a monster.
Yeah. What is he, like 240?
He's I think he's 225. Okay. Last time Roland was like 225 something.
Okay.
Like
so a little bit bigger than us. What are you, like 195?
I'm 195, yeah.
A little bit bigger than you.
Yeah, he's a little bigger. You can feel it.
Can you really?
He's like one of those guys that you just...
Everyone has like the best things to say about him.
Yeah, he's a wonderful person, just a nice guy, and just likes to live life, you know what I mean? And that's a wonderful thing. He's a great person to be around. You feel good when you're around him, you know?
Yeah.
He makes you feel good, but he's also realistic, you know what I mean? which I like, you know what I mean? He's like,
what do you mean by that?
Like, I just mean like he'll tell you what he feels.
Oh, yeah.
You know? If your guard sucks that day or whatever, he's like, bro, your guard sucks. You know, like he says he has this one like something about like Highway 80 or something. He said, bro, your guard's like Highway 80. Everybody passes all the time. So he's always making jokes, you know?
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, I mean, he's a monster, man. When he's training hard, especially if he's getting ready for a tournament or something like that, and he's in good shape and he can roll for, I mean, that last time I was getting ready for the last fight to win, and we rolled like, I don't know if it was 11 rounds or something, like 11 8-minute rounds.
Oh, damn.
And it was just nonstop, you know, and we were just like, and we were going at it. And it was just at the end, it was the last like 6 rounds were just him and I and Gaval, one of the other black belts that was just there. He's just watching us and, you know what I mean? Kind of just watching. Everybody had left, and it was just one of those gym wars, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but they make you stronger, you know? But my point is like, he's just in good shape. You know, because I was considering myself like I was in good shape at the time, and he was like right there putting the pressure the whole time, man, the whole time. And it's like he's like one of those guys like if you let him park, it's like a bus. You know, if he grabs your hips or something, it's so you gotta like it's always just trying to prevent him from anchoring. You know, but eventually he finds his way there and crushes you. You know,
yeah, it's tough. So, it's tough, man. Like some of these guys, like you gotta keep. I tell my white belts, it's like you know, once someone settles down onto you.
Yeah,
if they know what they're doing, it's fucking hard.
Right? Yeah,
like, it's trouble. Really, really hard. You know, all things being equal, it's hard to get out from under a person, especially in the gi. I feel like it's so much easier to pin someone down in the gi.
Sure.
You know, like in no gi, you have so much more room to like move your hips, maybe give up your back for a second just to get up to your feet.
Yeah.
But in the gi, there's just so much like, no, I'm holding
all those anchor points.
I'm holding on here, bro.
Yeah. You start feeding the lapel under or something, and it makes it really, really difficult. And it's like the amount of effort that needs to be invested versus reward is much more in your favor in gi, right? Because you can just make these anchor points, and you're like, okay, and you just relax. Like you're giving 20%, 30%, and the other person's giving 100% trying to get out.
They say about like gi jujitsu that it's supposed to like help small people kind of like hold back big people and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like for me, when I'm in the gi, it really helps me smash small people.
Yeah. Like, I guess it depends on the skill set, right? I guess
depends. No, but like, I don't know, like they're like big Jordan, like bigger guys with like big old paws.
Yeah.
That really know how to hold on to the gi.
Yeah.
Like it just, in my feeling, it almost just kind of like accentuates. Like if you're more physical and you know how to use the gi, like you're going to,
sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I got this guy, Big Jordan. He's like he says he's 220, but I don't believe it. I think he's like more like 260.
Yeah.
He's big. He's one of our black belts. He's an amazing grappler, but
yeah.
In no gi, I kind of feel like, you know, like when like the killer whale is like chasing the seal,
mm-hmm.
and the seal like is trying to get. I feel like that when I go with him in Nogi, you know. But in the gi, there's like no, like there's no chase. He just grabs onto something, you know, pins me down, and that's it. Like I can't move. You know what I mean? Where it's like, shoot, like this. I feel like this training method just did nothing but accentuate the difference in strength. It didn't help me at all. You know,
sure.
maybe it's because I'm not good enough at like playing like lapel guard or worm guard or any of these like fancy guards to keep them off me. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Probably I'm not really educated in that kind of mode of jujitsu.
Yeah.
Like,
I hear
you know, I'm more of like a team alpha.
Yeah. Guy. I don't do a ton of that stuff either.
That new school stuff. I don't know about it, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. It works obviously because these guys win world championships on it. And you know, like, I'm not a huge fan of it, but like the stuff, like there's some stuff that Keenan Cornelius does.
Yeah.
I was just talking the other day. Meredith and I were talking. We were watching
like one of his DVDs.
It was Fight to Win or something.
Oh, okay.
And man, there's this guy. It's like people are talking about how good he is, and you know, and Meredith even tells me like, oh, like I heard like this one girl's husband. And he's supposed to. I'm like, oh, sweet, you know. So it's a black belt match. I'm watching it, and this guy wrapped the lapel around his leg. Like he kept like he was going against DJ Jackson.
Okay. Okay.
And he just wrapped the lapel around and just held it inside the clothes guard around his thigh. So DJ had a really hard time trying to open the guard.
Yeah.
You know, because he had DJ tied to his leg with his lapel. Literally, it was like 6.5 minutes of the match. I'm like, when I don't like it. And obviously, maybe it's just my lack of understanding. I don't know. But I don't mind if you use the lapel.
A black belt. I feel like you understand pretty well.
Yeah, but I mean, right. You know, it's different levels, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I don't mind if you use the lapel. You could tangle me up as much as you want with the lapel, as long as it leads to you tapping me out.
Yeah.
I don't like the whole, like, just tie me up, hold, like what are we doing? Are we rolling? Are you trying to kill me or not? Are you just tying me up or what's going on here? That's the thing that I don't like. I think you should be as creative as you want to be, as long as it leads to you submitting the other person. I don't like the whole stall, like, let me tie you up like this and then look at the ref or look at the, oh, look what I'm doing. Like, what the hell? I don't like that. That really bothers me. That's not jujitsu. You know what I mean? The goal is supposed to try to submit your partner.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You know, when you think about jujitsu, you know, I was watching the NCAA wrestling finals yesterday.
Yeah.
Which is why the house is looking kind of lived in. So I had some folks over to watch the NCAA finals. Then we just kind of wound up having beers and hanging out. But, you know, you think about like these different sports as like a product for somebody to view, to put on TV. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like wrestling, jiu-jitsu, MMA, they all have like things that are working for them and things that are working against them, you know?
Sure.
Like wrestling needs to get rid of the singlets. Like, why are we still doing the singlet thing? It's fucking goofy.
Yeah.
The singlets are really weird. You know, and this is from someone who wore a singlet for like a year, you know, but there's no like, why wouldn't it just be rash guards and shorts? There's no reason for it not to be rash guards and shorts.
Yeah.
Also like mat wrestling, like freestyle mat wrestling is not the most exciting, you know? And then when I think about jiu-jitsu as like something that you want to put on TV or, you know, hopefully in the Olympics one day.
Yeah.
Just like what you were talking about, this like, this culture of stalling is killing the viewership of the sport. You know, I like to do jujitsu. Obviously I love jujitsu, right?
Yeah.
I won't watch it.
Sure.
I won't like, it's not compelling to watch, you know, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Gi jujitsu is really not compelling. I'll watch the highlights from like Pan Am's on Flow Grappling.
Yeah.
I'll watch like,
cause they're just showing you a highlight of the guys that were getting after it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just showing you the actual action points as opposed to, oh, let me grab a sleeve. Let me pull guard. Like, it's not compelling. It's really fun to do it, but it's not compelling to watch.
Yeah. And again, I think it's, you know, it's just different perspectives, different goals in jiu-jitsu, I think, right? I'm not a world champion. So how do I don't have any place to talk. Like, obviously these guys are doing this and they're winning world titles, but that's their goal, right? So they've adapted their game to accomplishing the goals that they have. If their goal is to be world champion, they say, hey, If I could be a world champion if I do this, then okay, then do that, I guess. You know, it's just hard, right? Because you don't want to say like, well, this sucks, you know, even if you don't like it. Like I look at it and I'm like, man, I don't like that. Like that's frustrating to me. You know, you see that and it's like, okay, you see two people tied up. It's like, you guys are two world-class black belts and I could have got two blue belts that could have did that.
Yeah.
Two white belts that I could show, grab the lapel like this, keep it on your leg and close your guard. And don't open your guard.
Mm.
It's like, if they can do that, like, I feel like there's something missing here. you know? But anyway, I think
it also kills athleticism, right? I mean, Faraz Zahabi talks about how, like, you know, he doesn't really love to take jiu-jitsu athletes into MMA.
Yeah.
Because they suck as athletes.
Sure.
Because as you get better at it and you get, like, really, really good at the, you get, like, really, really good at just holding onto the lapel and being, like, almost like rock climbing. You're just, like, static holding and moving.
Yeah.
It kills explosiveness. It kills movement up on
your legs.
Which I
think can be beneficial for training.
Yeah, no, it's beneficial for training. But if you try to move that modality to MMA.
Sure.
I mean, it used to be all the champions were jiu-jitsu guys.
Yeah.
Now they're all wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know, because they have that modality of training where it's like, no, you're up on your feet. You know, you're moving explosively. You have to control a guy. And then you add in a guillotine. And then you add in, like, a Darce. And then, you know what I mean? But I feel like those guys are starting to do better in MMA now than, like who are the really traditional jiu-jitsu players in MMA right now that are killing it?
Yeah. I mean, Damian Maia is always a classic go-to. He's 37. But he just retired. I think he just retired.
Yeah.
He's going too
soon. Yeah. And then Nick and Nate, of course, if they come back, you know, respect to them. But, you know, even
with Nick and Nate, they're like, there's always respect to them, right? Because they're warriors and they go out there and fight. But they're not traditional, like, they're not a Damian Maia, or they're not like a, you know what I mean? And that's not like a downplay. But I mean, you talk about the difference in jiu-jitsu. Damian Maia is a jiu-jitsu fighter.
Yeah.
True and true.
Yeah.
Goes Nick for the Nate, takedown. Nick grabs a single leg, tries to take you down, tries to strangle.
Yeah, Nick and Nate will box and stuff.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. Yeah. But I mean, it's just, to me, two different worlds, you know, two different animals.
I know, but just getting back to what we're talking about, like, I feel like jiu-jitsu is, like, losing some of its effectiveness. Or the jiu-jitsu product that is being practiced nowadays most commonly is losing some of its effectiveness in self-defense and in mixed martial arts.
Sure.
You know, because of this type of stuff that we're talking about here, where it's like, I feel like there's some keepers of the old school flame that are like, no, wait, guys, there's elements of wrestling here. There's elements of explosion. There's, you know, I tell my guys, like, we're going over like leg locks. And I was telling my guys, like, well, you know, technically, if you got really good at these leg locks, you don't even need to learn to pass guard, you know, which is why I'm not teaching them to you a lot right now. So I want you guys to learn to pass guard.
Yeah.
And one of my students was like, well, why wouldn't you just leg lock every time and not worry about passing guard? And I was like, well, because there's self-defense implications to sitting down on your butt.
Yeah.
There's something like, if this guy has a buddy, you're going to get fucking smashed, you know?
Yeah.
Like there was Mike, the cop, like this police officer Instagram just posted this like really nice sequence of this cop, like, this suspect like lunged at him. He like grabbed the arm, turned it into a Kimura, took him down with it, knee on belly. Like,
okay, yeah, I saw the video.
Yeah, kept his head up, scanned for additional threats, you know, from a self-defense perspective, all while keeping knee on belly, like fixed his hat, and then like cuffed the guy. It's like, holy shit, like here's a really nice grappling sequence where you're like staying on top of the guy, neutralizing the threat, scanning for additional threats, and not like sitting down. You know, you can't do that if you sit down for a toe hold on that guy.
Yeah.
Also, if you sit down for a toe hold on that guy, who's to say he doesn't like kick you with the other leg?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, sure. You can't risk any of that, like in a self-defense. Let me tell you, I had one guy at a bar. It was a case of mistaken identity. He thought I was somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But he like tried to slap me and like move my head out of my way. And his little fingertips like grazed my nose. And my nose hurt every day for like 8 months after that. Just like he moved my nose the right way.
Yeah.
And so I guess I feel like from a self-defense perspective, there's really something valuable, like pinning someone down, controlling their limbs, not letting them touch you at all.
Yep.
Because you can't even take one hit.
Yeah.
You know, you'll never know what'll fuck you up.
Yeah. And this it's funny because this is something I talk about on a regular basis, that it's fun that we like to do all these different things. Like I love leg locks. Like I love to do them and I love to train them. Man, I love it. You know, I teach it to my guys, you know, but when I'm talking to my students, I tell them, make no mistake that jiu-jitsu, the objective is, if you ever get to a situation where you need to defend yourself, it is about avoid getting hit, grab them, take them to the ground, smash them, and strangle them if need be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So this is not like some fancy spin underneath him, sweep him, or some beautiful lotus sweep and come on top. Like that stuff is great to do in training. But when it comes to self-defense, it's don't get hit, grab a hold of them, take them down, and neutralize the situation.
Yeah, stand
tall. Yes. It's very basic, you know? And like I tell them this, like, hey, I'm going to show you guys this, but remember, this is more for you guys to have fun, you know, try it for some of them that want to compete.
Dojo.
Yeah, we're having a good time. We want to expand our jiu-jitsu as much as possible.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want them to have as much knowledge as possible so that way they can pass it on to the students and the younger kids also, right? Mm-hmm. But When it comes to effectiveness, it's like very simple. It's cut and dry. You know what I mean? That's how I look at it. You know?
Yeah. Get on top of them, squish their head.
Yeah. Show them some love. That's what we like to call it. You know, show them some love. So,
hey, so you, you're talking about like you were bigger when you were a kid,
mm-hmm.
and then you kind of used martial arts to get in shape. You're kind of going through like another like fitness, like renaissance right now, right? Cause like when I first met you, you were hurting because your knee, so you probably weren't in the same shape, and like now you're like getting shredded again, right?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I just been back when I went to. So what happened? What changed my thought process was, first of all, when I blew my knee out, that put me out for a year, right? I couldn't do anything. I was just like in my grave.
When I was on the mat, you were like looking on the mat longingly. You're like, I want to train, guys.
And that's how it was for a long time, you know. Yeah. But still on the mat every day, and you know, teaching class, and still, and it actually changed the way I roll now. But anyway, so now I'm being able to lift again, and I'm able to squat again. So I'm doing a lot of kettlebell squats and things like that, just trying to build the muscle.
Do you go heavier or do you go like more reps?
I go more reps. I'm more of a repetition type guy. Yeah. You know, lately I've been going a little heavier just because
you need that strength, right? For the
there's some matches that I'm hoping to do. Like after I went to Abu Dhabi trials and stuff like that, I felt really strong there. But I was already kind of starting to get bigger, and I'm like, I feel like I can put on some more weight and still feel good. Yeah. You know,
for your leg, do they want you to do weights or do they want you to do like for your,
I do a lot of stability rehabbing stuff. Yeah.
Do they want you to do like the heavy weights to get more muscle on that leg, or do they want?
Yeah. Well, that's just for me. I've just been taking it upon myself now, because the wonderful thing is that in terms of the repair itself, it took really well. Like I've seen like 3 physical therapists, and they all told me like, your body took really well to the repair because it's super strong. And a lot of times, on my right leg, I actually have better balance now than I do on my left leg.
A lot of people probably don't get that lucky.
Yeah. And it's like, the struggle comes in the mobility thing. Cause I lost some mobility. I can't bend my foot all the way to my butt anymore. I'm working on it, but it's like still a ways away. You know, it's very difficult, and that can obviously affect your game, but it's just kind of changed things a little bit. So now I'm back to squatting and stuff and feeling strong. It doesn't bother me. It just stiffens up a little bit, you know, if I'm not stretching it, but it doesn't bother me when I'm squatting. I did some deadlifting yesterday, leg press, stuff like that. And
basic.
Just basic movements. I don't get too crazy, you know. If I'm doing stability stuff, it's no weights. Like if I'm doing a stability ball or stability plate or something that's going to keep me like off balance, I don't do any weights with that, you know. Just my body weight is usually
enough.
You
do a lot of work on that?
I do. I try to get some type of work on my leg almost every day.
Stability work? You know?
Yeah. So even if I'm teaching class, I'll be doing like usually like walking lunges or just kind of standing on one of those. We have like those pods. It's like you're filled with air and you stand on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are tough.
Because the ACL repair, like, kind of weakens.
It needs all these little different movements.
Yeah, it's like, because everywhere, you know, if your foot bends inward, you're a little bit stronger or weaker. Yeah. Foot bend, you rotate in, rotate out. So a lot of those, I just do a lot of kind of foot movement exercises. And slowly getting the strength back. So
I never did any of those. I grew up like skateboarding and surfing, so that's kind of like my stability
work. Yeah, sure. That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, you can get like a 2-liter bottle of Coke. Dump out the Coke and put water in it.
Uh-huh.
And it's a really nice cylinder.
Oh yeah, nice.
It's like a nice cylinder that'll roll like this for you.
Uh-huh.
And then you can go out and buy a skateboard deck. Not the whole skateboard, just the top of it.
Yep.
And the deck is like $20 maybe. And then you can just put the skateboard deck on the bottle and just kind of.
Yeah, what are those boards called? They sell those.
Well, they sell those boards. They're called Indo boards. But yeah, they sell those for like $150. Yeah, yeah. What I'm describing here is a $15 solution. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But you kind of learn to have like, okay, I have more weight on my left leg. I have more weight on my right leg. You
sure
can kind of spin around on it, you know?
Yeah. Might have to do that.
It's really helpful. You know, do it on like carpet or do it on the dojo floor or something in case you eat it.
Yeah.
You can't eat it.
Sure.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. I see those in the world. I see like the video. I'm like, man, that looks like it would be perfect for my leg. Cause it obviously, you know, coming after knee surgery, like affects your whole leg, which affects your hip too. Right.
Oh,
so it's
my
like,
God.
So it's like all of that, you know what I mean? So being in that squat stance
seems painful.
Yeah, I mean it's not comfortable, you know. I mean it's uncomfortable, but they had to replace my ACL and repair my meniscus at the same time, so it was kind of like,
a big surgery.
Yeah, so it, you know, so there's on a daily basis when I do all the stretching, kind of breaks through scar tissue and stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just a constant process, but now it's just kind of become part of my life, so I enjoy like repairing it, rehabbing it, mm-hmm. working it out and feeling the gains from it, you know, like, oh, I'm feeling stronger or seeing more muscle.
That's kind of cool that you like know what's going on. You're like literally like, oh, when I bend it backwards here, I know I'm getting through some scar tissue. Oh,
yeah.
It's kind of like to have that level of depth of knowledge of your body, you know?
Sure.
So how do you balance like all this like heavy weight work with training, with like jujitsu?
So,
cause I feel like, man, when I hit the weights and then I do jujitsu, I feel like it's sometimes like one or the other.
Yeah. You know? So I don't lift too often.
That could just be my
body. I don't lift too often. I lift probably 3 days a week. Okay. I work out on a couple of the other days also, but it's usually like stability stuff.
Okay.
Meaning like I might do like some, not too heavy, like kettlebell squats, stuff like that. Maybe some kettlebell swings, just stuff to kind of get my body moving. The Jacob's ladder.
You familiar with the Jacob's ladder? The thing that you put down or
the rotating, it's like a treadmill, but for bear crawls.
Oh fuck.
It's got like the wooden handles that come downward.
Yeah. I've seen those.
That's intense. Those are awesome. So they got one of those at the gym that I go to.
How much is that thing?
Like to buy?
Yeah.
I think they're like 4,700. I've looked into it. I think they're like $4,700 or something.
Yeah, shit.
But they're awesome. I'd love to have one of those.
Really?
Because we had one at Jackson's too. When I trained at Jackson's, they had a couple of them there. And those things are awesome, man. You can get a killer workout just on that thing.
Yeah, you get your legs, your arms, your abs, everything.
Yeah, it's awesome. But anyways, so I do more endurance cardio type stuff.
Mimicking jujitsu.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're getting up pretty close to an hour here. So I gotta let you go here in a minute. But before we do, what's next for Strive, and then what's next for? I think we talked about this a little bit. And what's next for you in jiu-jitsu?
So for Strive, it's just an ongoing process, an ongoing goal, you know. It started off just literally, it sounds like kind of cliche, but it started off just like a thought process. Like I've always wanted to have my own gym, and I kind of got the opportunity to have that. And then ever since then, I just told myself, like I want it to be something different. Like I don't want it to just be like a hole in the wall gym, like a little, I don't want to just say like, oh, I have this little gym. For me personally, my personal goal, you know,
sure,
I want to offer something that people can be proud to be a part of and something that people want to, you know, sought us out. So I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but people that pursue you, like, hey man, I heard really good things about that place, we really want to go there, you know. They have good people and good jiu-jitsu, and I just always wanted to have respected jiu-jitsu and a wonderful environment for people, a nice place that people could feel happy to come to. So that's what we've been trying to do up until now. And that's what we're going to continue to do. You know, my goal is to have like a complete academy that has high level jiu-jitsu, an amazing environment. Also has like a yoga and a fitness area and stuff like that. You know, I want to have a place where people can come and just that be their place. You know, they just feel at home there and they feel good there. You know,
what advice would you have to like people looking to start their new a gym or kind of get into business like this?
You know, I don't know if I'm one to give advice, you know, but I would say that in my experience, you have to make sure that it's something that you're doing because you're extremely passionate about it, you know? And I think that's something you hear often.
Yeah.
I think,
like, don't just do it to do it.
Yeah. You know, and I have certain thoughts on that. You know, I think people just do it to do it too often.
Yeah.
You know, I think people just, hey, I want to have a gym and it sounds like a cool idea and they just do it. And that's great. I mean,
it's a lot of work.
It has nothing to do with me.
It's a lot of work. Yeah.
But it's a lot of work. That's my point. And it's like, if you're going to do it the right way and for the right reasons, then it's a lot of work, but that's a beautiful thing because if it should be a lot of work, right? People think like, oh, you have a jiu-jitsu gym. It's like, oh, your life is cake, man. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's wonderful. I love my life, but it's not easy.
Yeah.
You have to work very hard, just like you do at any other job where someone has to work very, very hard, you know, and put in a lot of effort and drive and extra hours, and people have to feel like you want to be there. You have to want to be there.
Yeah. I mean, you set the tone for the energy in the gym.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. I mean, I think it becomes very apparent, you know, it's for me, it's like jiu-jitsu is everything to me right now. You know, at this point in my life, it's martial arts has done a lot for me, you know, I came from like, for example, my siblings and me, my brother and me, were two different people, two different paths, you know, and martial arts has helped me take my life down a positive path and let me have, I mean, literally anything that makes me happy, like martial arts and jiu-jitsu has given that to me. You know what I mean? And that, to me, that's powerful. You know, that's something that's like, I have nothing to complain about in my life, but again, when it goes back to having your own school, it has to be something that you really, really want to do. It can't be like, oh, I'm going to do this. And, oh, it sounds fun to have a gym. Like, I'm just going to have a gym. Because then what happens is you're doing yourself a disservice, right? If it's something you really enjoy and you open up a gym, but you're like, oh, this is kind of more difficult than I thought it was. And
you're like, fuck.
Yeah, damn it.
And you kind of paint yourself into
a corner. And then you end up just like, yeah, exactly. Right. And then it ends up being, you know, maybe a place where it's like, oh, you get like a handful of people that come and like, hey, what's up, man? And it just becomes this hangout spot.
Yeah.
You know, and at least in my thought process, the place I created in my head that I was trying to avoid. So I use that as a driving force. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to avoid being a place like this place in my own head, this place that I created. I want to avoid being this place. So I need to drive as far away from that as I can. You know?
Yeah. So what's next for you? Do you have any competitions coming up or?
So I'm hoping to do something in June, on Fight to Win. I'm really hoping it happens, man. Seth,
get your boy on.
Yeah. Yeah. Seth always takes care of me and I've been talking to him and bugging him. He's always got all these other things, of course, but I've been in his ear and he knows the matchup that I want. And I think it's a good matchup.
Yeah. Can you tell us who that is?
I don't know if I can. I probably shouldn't right now, but it's a big name, someone I respect a lot. But I think it's a really good match. I mean, honestly, I think I match up really well with him.
Yeah.
He holds the title right now. So
got it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's all then. That's
yeah,
all
we need to that kind of, you know. So there's a couple of different weight classes, but I'm hoping that's the next matchup for me. Maybe in the Fresno card. I don't know if Seth wants to get me on the Fresno card before the San Francisco card happens.
Okay.
I'm always open to it, but for now, just focusing on my students and building the academy. One other thing too is we have I'm throwing a submission only event coming up. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Like in-house or what are you
gonna... No, I have this nice venue picked out. It's going to be in Lodi.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Talk to us about that.
Sorry.
No.
So it's going to be, it's called the Bodybenders Invitational.
Okay.
And it's basically going to be like, we're trying to decide if it's going to be a 16 or 18 man bracket. And the first one's going to be 150 or 155 pounds to 185 pounds.
Got it.
Anywhere in that. It's going to be blue and purple belts.
Okay.
Okay. And it's going to be just that bracket. Everyone's going to fight it out. There's like a buy-in. We'll make the buy-in. Probably going to be like $75 or $100 bucks. You buy in. And then the winner gets $500-$600 cash.
Right.
Plus, you know, the belt and all this other great stuff. Then third gets a prize also.
Yeah.
We'll be streaming it live on YouTube and we're going to make like, it's got its own Instagram and stuff already.
Oh, cool.
That's the next thing that I'm working on in terms of a venture, you know?
Yeah.
I've always wanted to have my own event and, so that's kind of what this is, the first step to making that happen. But the venue is really nice. I'm super stoked about it. And we're looking to do that. What are we in right now? April, June,
May 20, March 24th,
March. So I think we're going to do June.
Okay.
Late June.
Okay.
Is what we're shooting for.
Okay.
And it's going to be all, we're going to do it right. Like everything's going to be done the way it needs to be done. And hopefully it'll be an awesome show that people
want to check us out today on that. Okay.
Yeah, I will for sure.
Where can folks follow you on Instagram?
It's at Motivated Manny.
Motivated Manny.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Academy?
At Strive JJF Academy.
Strive JJF. Give them a follow.
Yeah.
Manny, thanks for coming on, brother.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.